The next case, 10-47, State of Ohio versus Ronald Gingell. Ms. Slagle.
Good morning, Chief Justice O'Connor. May it please the court. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Initially, the issue in this case was which sentencing statute should apply to Ronald Gingell for failing to verify his address every 90 days. But in light of this court's decision in State versus Bodike, the question now is whether the conviction should be vacated. In Bodike, this court held that the reclassifications of offenders like Mr. Gingell, who had court-ordered registration duties, was an unconstitutional violation of the separation of powers doctrine. This court reinstated the court-ordered registration duties and made it clear that these offenders, like Mr. Gingell, are not subject to the Adam Walsh Act. Mr. Gingell's court order required him to verify his address once a year, but his conviction is for a failure to verify every 90 days, failing to comply with the Adam Walsh Act. Now, as the Second District and the Eighth Districts have already concluded, an unconstitutional law cannot be the predicate for a criminal conviction. Although the state insists that this conviction should stand simply because Mr. Gingell may have violated his Megan's Law duties, the state is wrong. Mr. Gingell wasn't charged with violating Megan's Law. He was charged with and convicted of violating the Adam Walsh Act. If he did indeed violate his duties under Megan's Law, the state is still free to reindict him under the correct criminal statute. But it would be unfair and a fundamental miscarriage of justice to allow for Mr. Gingell to remain convicted of a law that does not even apply to him. This court should vacate the conviction on the authority of State versus Bodike.
Counsel, is the original court order included in the record before this court?
No, sir, it is not.
And how do we know what the court ordered him to do?
Well, I don't think that there is any dispute because we have included that information in the briefs, and the state did not dispute that. We did ask this court to take judicial notice. The underlying criminal case was included in the indictment, but for some reason the registration duties were never part of that case.
Did your client's duty arise after the Adam Walsh Act took effect?
No, his duty arose, I believe it was 2004. He was brought back for an Eppinger hearing, and he was adjudicated a sexually oriented offender and ordered to register for 10 years.
Are you contending this is a retroactive application of Adam Walsh or not?
Initially, we were concerned that the sentencing statute was being applied retroactively.
Have you abandoned that argument?
We haven't abandoned that. First and foremost, the conviction itself was an unconstitutional application of the Adam Walsh Act. This court has already determined that Adam Walsh does not apply to him. Now, if this court believes that Adam Walsh Act does apply to him, then yes, he would still insist that the sentencing statute that is memorialized in his final court order is the sentence that should apply for a failure to register or for a failure to verify.
How can I determine what date your client was supposed to register?
From the record, sir, we can't.
Pardon me, please?
From this record, we cannot determine that date.
Well, then we really don't know whether he was supposed to report on one day or another, and whether he violated the annual reporting under the old law or the quarterly reporting under the new law.
What we do know is that he was...
That's a question.
Oh. No,
do you
we
agree
do not
with that?
Know.
We just don't know.
We do not know. But what we do know is that he was charged with violating the version of 2950.06 that was in effect in May of 2008. 2950.06 talks about the duties of a Tier 1, a Tier 2, and a Tier 3. Now, at that point in time, he had been reclassified a Tier 3 and the Adam Walsh Act was requiring him to register every 90 days. So we do know that his conviction was based upon a failure to register or to verify his address every 90 days. And again, if he did fail in his Megan's Law duties, the state can still reindict him on that charge, charge him under the correct statute.
So you're basically saying that, he was a sexually oriented offender with a 10-year registration. Adam Walsh came in. The Attorney General reclassified him. They charged him for failing to register under the new reclassification. Bodike basically said that's unconstitutional, so he should basically go back to his old status with any violations alleged under the old status, charged under the old status, and that the new conviction is gone.
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct.
It is that simple.
Yes,
although,
Your Honor.
Although you're telling us that there's no record evidence of the initial sentencing that shows he was classified under the old law?
Not in this record. There is a record of that in the criminal case number, but the failure to register charge was a separate charge with a different criminal number.
So then,
but if we went to the criminal case number, you're saying that the actual sentence which shows the registration requirements, that is in the record of that criminal case. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
And then you would simply ask us to remand this case to the appellate court for an application of Bodike to your client. Is that what the relief you're seeking here?
Yes, Your Honor. Either vacate or remand back to follow Bodike. Okay. If there's no further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you. Ms. Adams.
Morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Ms. Slagle, Mr. Singleton. It's the state's position here that Bodike is not applicable to this particular conviction, specifically because the statute under which he was convicted, 2950.06b4, specifically provides for individuals like Mr. Gingell, who previously had a duty to verify their annual or provide verification of their address on either a 90-day or yearly basis, a continuation of that prior duty. And it even specifically indicates.
But we basically said that the Attorney General has no power to change an original court order and impose those additional requirements. And so we've basically said you can't do that. So how do you reconcile our saying the Attorney General has no power to reclassify with him violating a statute we says no longer applies to him?
Well, because he had previously been classified, he had a previous duty.
So you charge him under that statute?
Correct. He still had his duty was there was a continuation of his duty. So regardless,
counsel, do you agree that he only had the obligation to report once a year for 10 years?
Correct.
And you are now alleging that he violated that duty to report?
Well, I think that the record doesn't provide that. The date that we're given is that on or about May 6, 2008, he failed to verify his address. It's the state's position that that was his initial registration.
That was his yearly date that he should have?
Yearly date.
How do you arrive at that?
Well, I don't know that the information is, because this was a guilty plea and we don't have the transcript from the plea hearing, the paperwork that was provided at the time of the initial charge does provide that information, but as this court's well aware, 2950.06 does not make a distinction between a 90-day verification versus an annual verification. So there's not a specific subsection that's provided under. The date that we're given is we're limited to what's in the indictment.
That was viewed in light of his reclassification by the Attorney General, and that's what triggered your office's or the determination there was a violation. His status as a reclassified offender pursuant to the Adam Walsh Act?
Because of the B4 section, making reference to that initial registration date, I don't believe that whether he was reclassified or not is significant.
But, under the court order originally, if he did not report, it was a fifth-degree misdemeanor, correct?
No. At the time that he had his duty, and I believe that was their original argument, was that the law that should be applied for his violation of the registration requirements should be the law that was in effect at the time that his duty to register.
And that was a fifth-degree misdemeanor.
A fifth-degree misdemeanor, yes.
And because...
Or fifth-degree felony, I'm sorry.
Fifth-degree felony. And because he was reclassified, the charge was brought on him under the reclassification, which makes it a first-degree felony with 8 years, correct?
Not because he was reclassified. Because he failed to verify his address as he was required to on an annual basis, that would still be a felony one, because 2950.99 indicates that the level of felony for failure to comply with the registration requirement.
Why is that not retroactive when his court order says you have a 10-year period, and if you don't register, it's a fifth-degree felony, and now he doesn't register, it automatically becomes a first-degree felony within 8 years for failing to register, and that is a huge additional penalty that didn't exist. Why is that not a retroactive law when he has a duty given to him as a punishment because failure to register can create a new crime?
Well, the reason that this is not a retroactive is because the offense, the violation, occurred well after the effective date of the amendment to the penalty phase. And I believe the 10th District Court of Appeals in State versus Ritchie has dealt with this particular issue when there was a previous change in the statute that changed the offense level from a felony 5 to a felony 3.
I think we understand the retroactive application issue. The question I have is, can you tell us what his original report date was, or where in the record could we find it?
Well, I have been unable to locate in the record, because what we have here is several different records. We have his original sexually oriented offense occurred in 1981, three rape convictions. He was originally released from his original hearing date, I believe, in connection with that, to classify him, occurred prior to his release from incarceration sometime before 2006. A lot of this information is provided in our case that we're here for the violation of failing to verify his address, in information that was brought in the probation investigation report or in the pre-sentence investigation, as well as the court clinic report. There's substantial information in that. So,
well, Ms. Slagle wants us to go back to the original criminal file, but the fact is this record doesn't show a date when he was supposed to report. True or not?
Correct. But I believe if we presume that if we're doing 90-day increments, the statute went into effect January 1st, 2008.
Yes.
His offense date is alleged May 6th, on or about May 6th, 2008. Add or subtract
assuming
the...
he missed at least one 90-day reporting period. We can infer that is what you're saying.
If we're doing the 90-day, yes. But if we do the math, that May, on or about May 6th, 2008 date is not a 90-day increment. It's a continuation of his initial registration date that he had previously.
But we don't know what that was.
I believe we do from this record, because that is the date that's provided. Now, we're add or subtract dates regarding the sheriff's obligation to provide notification.
What is the relief that you want us to impose, or what rule of law do you want us to write if we would agree with your position?
Well, I think... Certainly recognizing that in light of this court's decision in Bodike, that 2950.04 or 0.06B4 provided for the continuation of the duties that individuals had pre-existing prior to the Adam Walsh Act. So it's not as if they're...
Counsel, that's not really in dispute. If you are reclassified erroneously, you are then, pursuant to Bodike, restored to your original classification. The duties that are attendant to that original classification are also restored or incumbent upon you based on that status. Would you agree with that?
Correct.
All right. So we have this defendant being released in 2006, reporting in 2006, reporting in 2007. You cannot tell us what date he was required to report on either 2006 or 2007, but we know that he was compliant, correct?
I believe so.
All right, so 2008 rolls around, the law changes, and you were under the impression when he was charged with failure to report that he was appropriately classified pursuant to the Adam Walsh Act, correct?
Correct. We would have to presume that.
Okay. So then he is charged with not reporting pursuant to his status as an Adam Walsh Act offender. Correct?
Correct. But again, I think that an individual like Mr. Gengel is essentially a hybrid type of offender because he had that pre-existing duty just because, and it's not as if the prosecutor's office is looking at what tier he fell under in this particular charge.
You can't tell us whether right now whether he violated his yearly duty to report. And that's all he's obligated to do right now, correct?
Correct. And I believe that the record does provide that.
Where does that tell us in the record that, forget the every 90 day,
right?
We all agree that that doesn't apply to this defendant, correct?
Correct.
Where in the record would we find that he reported on one day in 2006, another day 2007, compliantly, and then in 2008, a year later, he failed to apply or register?
Well, I think that, again, the information is limited. We're limited to what's in the pre-sentence investigation report as well
as... Is that information in the pre-sentence investigation report?
I don't know that the...
And is that part of this record?
Yes. The pre-sentence investigation report is part of this record as well as the court clinic report. And the court clinic report does discuss how Mr. Gengel was in compliance previously and even provides what his explanation was for why he did not on this particular date, saying
and
that I've done it every...
It will support the fact that he missed his yearly reporting date, not a 90-day date, but a yearly reporting date.
Yes, that's the state's position, yes.
But your argument then is even if he violates the yearly report, you could now charge him with a first-degree felony instead of a fifth.
Yes, Your Honor.
Because of Adam Walsh.
Right. Because at the time that he failed to verify, the time that he committed the offense, which is what we're looking at, that is the statute that was in effect. Not reaching back to what the prior obligation was or what the penalty would have been at the time that the duty was incurred. And again, I believe that the 10th District has a case, State versus Ritchie, that's cited in my brief that provides an explanation for that.
So let me go back to the original question I asked. What is the relief that you are seeking, or what order or rule of law do you want us to write if we agree with your position that this is not a retroactive application of the law because the law changed on January 1st and imposed a greater penalty for those who failed to register?
Thank you for reminding me, Justice O'Donnell. I believe that, again, I'll cite the 10th District's decision in State versus Ritchie. I believe that their analysis, and so the state would urge you to adopt that, although that had to do with a different change from a felony 5 to a felony 3, the reasoning in the state's position is still the same. So certainly the state is mindful of the fact that in Bodike, this court determined that the appropriate remedy was severance, indicating that removing the reclassification scheme would not detract from the General Assembly's goals and objectives in providing this statute. And it's the state's position to overturn a defendant's conviction would not allow the General Assembly to meet those objectives. Because, again, the General Assembly provided for that continuation in adopting the B4 section.
What can we tell the lawyers who have clients that are similarly situated to Mr. Gingell that they should do, or prosecutors, that the law is as a result of this case, if there are others in the same situation?
Well, I believe that, again, for violations, the law that's in effect at the time that the offense occurred, we're not going to reach back to the law that was in effect at the time that the registration obligation was incurred.
But we would apply the law in effect at the time the violation occurs.
Correct.
And that really isn't any novel law. That's pretty much understood. And is that about the only rule of law that you think we should write here?
And again, it's already a rule of law, so it's just the state's position that this is not in retroactive application.
Thank you.
Although, counsel, you could look at it that looking at it the other way, all of this, all of the registration requirements are imposed as part of a sentence for activity that occurred prior to the change in the law. That's the only reason that reporting is required. It's all linked to the sentence package that the court has imposed and the finding for registration that the court has imposed for those offenses.
No, I would not agree that it's part of the sentence, and I think that historically, going back to this court's decision in State versus Cook, to say that the registration obligations are connected to the sentence, I don't believe that
you
that's
don't see it to be a penalty.
The violation ultimately is will be punitive or will result in punitive activity, but the actual act of requiring someone to follow the registration scheme, I do not believe is punitive and is not actually part of the sentence.
You believe this case should go back to the Court of Appeals for a Bodike review?
I don't believe so. I don't believe it's necessary. I think that this is already provided in the statute, and that his conviction should be affirmed and his sentence should be affirmed.
You think it's clear that he is only a Megan Law violator, not an Adam Walsh violator, or do you think that's confused in this record?
The subsection B4 I think provides for Megan's Law violations because it references individuals like him who
you
had
agree
a previous.
He is a Megan Law violator, not an Adam Walsh violator.
It's hard to make that distinction because the Adam Walsh statute provides for both by that B4 section, I believe.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Counselor, you've saved over 8 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Let me start by asking, you wanted to, I think, pretty much simplify this and say that, Bodike controls, he's not a should not be required to report under Adam Walsh, but merely under Megan's Law. And the argument counter to that is, okay, let's give him the status of Megan's Law. He still missed his reporting date.
He may have missed a reporting date. I do not know if that was his Megan's Law reporting date or if it were his Adam Walsh Act reporting date. However, what I do know is that the statute that he was charged with violating was the current version of 2950.06, which refers strictly to Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3. There's no mention whatsoever of a sexually oriented offender. That particular statute, we know now, does not apply to him.
So your position would be that they still have the opportunity, if the record reflects that he missed his yearly reporting date, whatever that may have been prior to May of 2008, if there was a reporting date between January 1st, 2008, and sometime in May in 2008, that he would be subject to an indictment for that, and it would be under the new reporting requirements, which he may very well be in violation of.
Your Honor, yes, he would be subject to indictment for failing to verify under Megan's Law, but I do not believe it would be the Adam Walsh Act reporting standards or the new penalty statute.
Right. Why? The crux of that statement is why not the new penalty? Where is that distinction made that he gets the benefit of the fifth degree felony punishment for failure to report, as opposed to the current
penalty? Well, for Mr. Gingell, his court-ordered registration duties includes a specific notice that if he fails to register, the penalty is a felony of the fifth degree.
But the law changed for that offense. And if, in fact, he failed to report in 2008 pursuant to the requirements of Megan's Law, that is the criminal act, the failure to register. Would you agree with that?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so he would be under the statute that was in effect at the date that he makes that he fails to report.
I would say he would not be for two reasons. Number one, his court-ordered duties to register do include that notice. That is a final order, and as this court explained in Bodike, the General Assembly cannot impermissibly modify that order or reopen it or change it in any way, shape, or form.
But we have to get that order in order to determine that because we don't have it in the record, correct?
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct. It is in the criminal case number.
So if this matter were remanded for application of Bodike, that could be done, the order could be looked at, and it could be determined what exactly we're talking about here in terms of dates.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, the question is the meaning of retroactivity. We did talk about what we said in Bodike, and we did say the retroactivity is impermissible. If you heard counsel, she seems to suggest that we now have a new statute that has upped the penalty for failure to report. What's your view on allowing for the additional penalty to be imposed? Do you see that as a problem with retroactivity or not?
Yes, Your Honor, it is a problem with retroactivity. But when you look at the language of the statute, there is no intent to apply it to individuals who had pre-existing duties. You don't see a clause that says, you know, this statute applies regardless of when your duty arose or regardless of when you committed your offense. I do not believe the General Assembly intended for that law to apply retroactively. And as this court has held in Heil versus Porter, that's the first step in the analysis of retroactivity. Now, even if the General Assembly did intend for it to apply retroactively, with Mr. Gingell, he has a substantive vested right in his court order that notifies him that any failure would be a felony of the fifth degree.
Can I take it? I'm sorry.
I was just going to respond that the section that Ms. Adams was referring to was 2950.06b4, which did talk about the continuing duty to report for those who have reported before January 1st of 2008. So it seems to me that there has been some suggestion that the duty continues, but I don't think that section talks about the sanction that should be imposed for failure to register.
And before you answer, if I could follow up on that, that becomes the perplexing part of this, because there's nothing in that statute that talks about a penalty for a sexually oriented offender. And if he's not reclassified, then how do we determine what the penalty for his failure to register as a sexually oriented offender would be?
That's correct. When you look at the penalty statute, 2950.99, it says if you violate these specific provisions, I believe it's 04, 05, and 06, and then it goes on to list the penalties. But when you go back to look at the SB 10 version of the 04, 05, 06, it doesn't mention sexually oriented offenders.
And that, of course, is because everybody was to be reclassified under Senate Bill 10. This court held that violated the separation of powers and couldn't, but the intent of the General Assembly is still clear, and one could reconstruct what that penalty was intended to be if it, in fact, applies in this case, correct?
Well, it is correct that the intent of the legislature was to have the reclassification in the Adam Walsh Act apply to all offenders. And when this court made the decision in Bodike and severed the statutes that allowed for the reclassifications, we have two separate sex offender schemes now. We still have the Megan's Law for those offenders who have court-ordered classifications, and now we have the Adam Walsh Act for those individuals who were convicted after January 1st, 2008.
So, counsel, the determination has really not been made. If this court determines that he is should be reclassified under the Megan's Law and sends it back to the First District for application, you may very well be back here arguing, depending on what they do with the determination, if he in fact violated his duty to report, which is the baseline question here. We don't know that. You have not been able to tell us that, and opposing counsel has not been able to tell us that as you stand here today. Under the Megan's Law that is, I think, undisputedly applicable to your client.
That is correct, Your Honor, but I still believe that this court can go ahead and vacate the conviction on the authority of Bodike because his conviction stems from a violation of the Adam Walsh Act.
Well, and the conviction almost seems the vacation should be for lack of evidence. I mean, we don't have the date. No one is talking about the date on which he was supposed to register and did not. I mean, isn't it as fundamental as that?
That is correct. We don't have the date, but we know that he doesn't have to verify every 90 days, and that's what his conviction is for, failure to verify every 90 days.
So then we may very well be back here if we would rule, our holding would be that, and the First District then would reindict. That would be the appropriate time to possibly deal with any issues of the appropriate sentence for a failure.
Yes, Your Honor.
Your light's on, but before you sit down, that's exactly my mind's been at sea through all of this. It's like a fog, it seemed to me. You've tried hard to present the issues, but what I'm getting out of this is you believe at some point we're going to need to look at a case, and your position is if your client missed the date under Megan's Law, the worst that could happen to him today would be fifth-degree felony. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And we have not resolved that question. We've not been presented with that question, have we?
No, sir. But the Eighth District has just issued a decision that the Megan's Law penalties apply to folks who were classified under Megan's Law as opposed to the Adam Walsh Act penalty. So you may have an opportunity to answer that question.
And the Tenth District has ruled otherwise. Is that correct?
No, Your Honor.
I thought Ms. Adams was talking about the Tenth District case where there was a – it was a similar situation where they said new penalties would apply.
There was a Tenth District case, State versus Ritchie, where the offender was initially convicted of a misdemeanor sex offense and sentenced to a felony for a failure to register. The argument in that case was that it was cruel and unusual punishment. Mm-hmm. And that predated Bodike.
Right.
And
if you could answer one last question, is the registration, in your view, the registration obligations part of the sentence or not?
In my view, it is part of the sentence. It does occur at the sentencing hearing, and to the extent that the court does issue an order making certain that the offender is notified of all of the duties and what the responsibilities are and what the penalty is, that is a final judgment that cannot be reopened, or modified by the General Assembly or by the Executive Branch.
Thank you.
Thank you.